coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast. At the CJ Cup in South Carolina, Rory roared his way back to the top. We discuss the achievement, plus the LIV Tour heading to a season finale at a slightly controversial venue, and a familiar name gets it done on the LPGA Tour. We're tuned into a Halloween Ends movie review and some awesome decor from Mike's life. This week's guest, Epson and LPGA Tour pro Daniela Iacobelli. She's been referred to as the John Daly of women's golf. So needless to say, this is an entertaining conversation coming your way. And it's Halloween traditions, a new bread alert when we always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. Talked with the team last week at Desert Fox Golf. They are ready, Mike. They are as ready as they've ever been for the holiday season, okay? So if you need the stocking stuffer for the golfer in your life, the Desert Fox Golf Team is ready to give that to you immediately and with a discount for the holiday season. Go to desertfoxgolf.com. Not only can you get the golfer in your life a phone caddy, you could also get them a swing aid tumbler. You can get them more golf merch and apparel for their game and their golf bag and their golf cart as well. Promo code Course of Life saves you 10%. Again, promo code Course of Life saves you 10% off at desertfoxgolf.com.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Tee Up Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was the CJ Cup in South Carolina at Congaree, just about an hour north of me in the Savannah area. And Commissioner Rory McIlroy, PGA Tour Commissioner Rory McIlroy, who didn't win a major this year, but is able to just win a lot of other things, won the FedEx Cup, and now won at the CJ Cup, and he regains the number one ranking in the world with those infamous now OWGR points.
Yes, those are very prized, I hear. Yeah. I hear people are really seeking those out very desperately right now.
But he got him because he was able to win, and Scottie Scheffler did not have a great week as well. So Rory McIlroy, the best player in the world. You know, if Scottie Scheffler just hadn't had that run at the beginning of the season, I think we had said this a few weeks ago when they gave Scottie Scheffler Player of the Year, it really should have gone to Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, probably when you add everything up in terms of model of consistency across 2022. You know, Scottie had the hottest heater, but Rory probably had the best 12 months if you're encapsulating all 12 months in every event played. It's been impressive. You mentioned it. Not only is he the best golfer in the world, he's full-time dad as well, too, putting his kids to bed moments after he wins the tournament. And he's also part-timing as the PGA Tour commissioner, like you mentioned, over the last several months in the PGA Tour versus LIV debacle. Rory McIlroy has his hands full right now at this moment with everything personal, inside the ropes, outside the ropes, and he's also dominating. He seems to have a peace of mind that we haven't quite seen from Rory. He's hit this new matured standpoint in his career and his life. Things just feel okay for Rory when he's free-flowing. I've said this many times over many years. I don't know if there's anyone more entertaining on the golf course when he is just free-flowing and dominating. It's great to see.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it at the FedEx Cup Championship as well. When he's on top of his game, he certainly shows why he earned that number one ranking in the world and was able to do it with a very good Sunday round, 67, a whole bunch of 67s on his card for the week, and this opening 66, holding off Kurt Kitayama from America.
Yeah, John Rose there too. It was a pretty good duel for the back nine on Sunday. It definitely had my attention more than any other Sunday fall tournament would.
And how beautiful is Congaree? I mean, thank goodness they got this course on the regular now, because this is just gorgeous in South Carolina.
It's mint. Yeah, it gives off those classic low country vibes and a lot of runway in and around the greens, which makes for a lot of creativity with short game. the putting surfaces were mint of all mint. The mintest greens I've seen in a long time. It had to be worth mentioning.
The weather here has been just gorgeous for the last 3 weeks. So that has certainly helped everything just be in pristine condition.
Yeah, really great week all around. Awesome to have Rory as the champion and take the number one spot there. I saw Scottie Scheffler myself take the number one ranking here at Austin at the match play in March. So his reign officially comes to an end. Great win for Rory. And a quick shout out to our friend of the program. Would we be remiss if we didn't mention Taylor Montgomery? The guy just keeps showing up on leaderboards. Another impressive week, tied for 13th. He's the unofficial cash cow of the PGA Tour right now. So shout out to Taylor Montgomery getting done again.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor, this podcast, really, we could rename this podcast the Taylor Montgomery Fan Club, because we are probably some of his most vocal fans here on the podcast. And we're going to say it here first. He will win on the PGA Tour. Probably, I'm going to go ahead and say it, before the end of 2023.
Yeah, I would say so, too. I mean, I told you he's on this Cam Young trajectory right now, where he's just going to throw himself on every single leaderboard until great things happen. So shout out to Taylor for getting it done again. You got to follow him. I keep picking him in my Run Your Pool articles every week, and people got to be wondering who this guy is that's standing for Taylor Montgomery. Well, the reason I am is because he racks up the finishes. So shout out to Taylor.
Yep. Also this week, the PGA Tour officially announced the remaining four quote unquote elevated tournaments that will be part of the 2023 season. Let's refresh everyone's memory on what this is, Alex. The PGA Tour said, okay, we'll play ball. We'll make these purses bigger.
Yep.
And so they said, these are the bigger purses. So it's the majors and the players. The three FedEx Cup playoff events, and I still cry every time the FedEx Cup comes around and we don't have the one in Boston.
Yep.
Because it was just the best.
I miss TPC Boston.
Yeah. We also have the three player-hosted invitationals. That is the Genesis, the Arnold Palmer, and the Memorial. And then we have the Century Tournament of Champions, the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play. And the four ones that are going to be joining it now are the Waste Management Phoenix Open.
Love it.
The RBC Heritage, the Wells Fargo, and the Travelers. Really, these elevated tournaments are the ones that all the big guys show up to anyway. So
yeah, exactly. So that's why those last four that you mentioned were important to me, because those are kind of tournaments when you run through the Waste Management, the Travelers, the Heritage, Wells Fargo, all kind of localized community-based events, great charity dollars. Obviously, the Waste Management has gotten this unbelievable image with the party atmosphere that they've created there over the years, and the attendance numbers have been through the roof. It's just kind of, it looked like kind of like a little bit of an attaboy from the PGA Tour, just doing a solid to some tournaments that have been around for a while. They haven't really attracted the best fields or the most panache or eyeballs, but just doing them a solid for being around and being great partners with the tour. And now the important thing here is these four tournaments are getting guaranteed entries from the top players in the world who are now committing to play in these four events, which is only going to improve them every year.
Yep. So we'll be on the lookout for all those starting next year. It'll be good. The LPGA, like we said last week, they were in the Republic of Korea for the BMW Ladies Championship. Excuse me. And Lydia Ko.
Shocking.
She won again.
I mean, just quietly. Yeah, I'm going to say hottest women's golfer on the planet right now. Definitely. I mean, she's just showing up on leaderboards and winning left and right. And this is the Lydia Ko that we kind of all thought we might be able to see 8-10 years ago when she first burst on the scene. Like I said, she's like the oldest, 25-26 year old human being in the world now, because we've been talking about her for a decade in the world of golf professionally. So it's really cool to see her career blossom the way it has. And she's just racking up the wins all over the world right now.
This coming weekend, LIV Golf decides to wrap it all up, and they're going to do it in style at Trump Doral in Miami. What do we think, Alex? Is Pat Perez going to get another like $20 million into his contract here? I mean, damn, this loser gets paid.
Here it is. It's the season finale here. Season one live, recapping it all here at Trump Doral. I wonder who owns that course, by the way. Trump Doral, I have no idea. But
I don't know.
Regardless, they're in Miami. It's a wrap on season one. Yeah, I think what that needs to be said. I think Pat Perez is maybe the biggest winner in this entire ordeal. This whole mess of a LIV Tour, PGA Tour debacle we've had, I think Pat Perez is the sole biggest beneficiary of the whole thing.
If he was still in the PGA Tour, he would have lost his card this season.
He would have. He would be have conditional status on the Korn Ferry Tour. Yeah. He'd be on the Monday Q circuit with all of our friends of the show. But alas, he's here taking home $7-10 million a week thanks to DJ and his team there. But LIV season one finale in the books. Obviously the headlines won't keep stopping from this tour. I'm sure there'll be something that comes of the play this week in Miami. Yeah, but they're going to play, and I don't really know who's going to care, but they're going to play.
No one cares because the four aces, I'm really kind of sad that I actually know that DJ's team is the four aces. it's going to just win the season-ending tournament here. So
unless those South Africans have something to say about it, right?
That's true. Sure, yeah, that's true. So like that. And unfortunately, they're going up against just a wonderful tournament. Like, all the big names are going to be out on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I know. This is tough because I want to give so much love to this week right now. This is one of those weeks where it's like, oh, what a unique venue Bermuda is for the PGA Tour. They head to the Butterfield Bermuda Championship, and it's such a unique course at Port Royal that I previewed on my Run Your Pool article. Check that out if you want to read more about the course itself. But not attracting the greatest of fields is the Bermuda Championship, but tough spot in the calendar nonetheless, obviously, following everything in the last couple of weeks. But they're going to play golf in paradise, so that counts for something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I mean, if we look at past winners who are going to be here, Seamus Power, Garrett Kiggo.
One of my picks.
Chad Ramey, Bill Haas. There's a blast from the past.
There's a FedEx Cup champion from the past.
I know. And Willie Mack III is going to be there as well.
Yes, Willie Mack's in the field. I saw that former podcast guest Dylan Wu also in the field at Bermuda. Mm-hmm. Big opportunity for him right now with his status on tour. Watch out for those guys. You're going to see some young guns, maybe like a Nick Hardy show up on the board. Take a look at my full picks in my Run Your Pool preview. But definitely Seamus Power is going to be leading that list, one of the betting favorites this week. Should be fun. Always fun to watch golf in paradise. And this is fun, Mike, because you get to see the wind whip off the ocean. And you get to see the players struggle on the par three when there's like 35 miles an hour breeze. And it just reminds us all that they're human, just like us as well.
They are indeed. So your picks article will be up on Run Your Pool. It actually should be up by the time you're listening to this podcast.
Yes, sir.
And full card of picks will be up on Twitter. He's at Course of Life One on Twitter. Maybe if I finally have 5 minutes, I will, give you my picks as well. I just haven't had a second of time to do anything on a Wednesday these days. So
that's okay. And we're coming up on the holiday season right now too. Let's get to some Halloween talk right now.
Yeah, let's do it with Tuned In. This is where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. Alex, I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at the reel I posted just the other day of this very impressive and intricate full size animatronic Halloween display. I don't even know what to call it, really.
And was this local in your neighborhood? Or did you do a little scavenging to find this?
No, this is like right down. It's not like in my direct neighborhood, but it's in my neighborhood. So it's like less than 5 minutes down the road. This guy does this every single year. He does something different in front of the front of the street leads back to his house.
Oh, and the detail as I'm watching this is amazing with the expression on all the figures. Mm-hmm. Oh, spiders lurking in the woods. I mean, there's a real whole theme going on in this display. This is not just I have a lot of money to spend on inflatables and I'm going to throw them all up. There's a story being told with this display.
And you need to watch this with the audio because these animatronics speak to you. They have sensors on them. Let's see when you stand in front of them and they start talking and they do things based on if you're in front of them or not. Supposedly this guy used to do special effects for Disney or something. And that's
nice.
That's what he does now in his free time as a retiree. He does this crazy thing every Halloween. So
there you go. So just play this reel at full volume in the middle of the night for your family member, your partner in your life, and get a Halloween prank reaction out of them.
There you go. You're welcome.
Nice. I consumed Halloween content myself, of course. Myself, my wife, we are suckers for the Halloween movie series, which has been going on for the better part of 44 years.
Yep.
Mike. That's how far we date back to the original with Jamie Lee Curtis. It all came to an end with Halloween Ends, which is now out in theaters. This was a movie that we knew for the week going in before we saw this movie. This was critically deadpanned across the board, given absolutely abysmal reviews by anyone and everyone on the internet who asked. So I don't think I've ever entered a movie theater with lower expectations in my life. So with that being said, it was not that bad. It really was not that bad. The main plot point that's annoying is two-thirds of the movie just does not do any of the Michael Myers, Jamie Lynn Curtis stuff that you would like to get to. And then at the end, they just kind of squeeze it all in with a furious finish of 20 minutes of film. So it missed there, but
yeah.
Overall, good view.
Okay, what did you think of the setting of the movie, kind of the what you saw, where they were, especially some of the exterior shots? Did it look cool and inviting to you? I mean, outside of it being dark and scary?
Yeah, I don't know. I really wasn't blown away either way, specifically. So, what are you getting at here?
Well, you know, you're supposed to say, no, that place looks great because it was filmed here in Savannah. So,
Cool. Yeah. Nice. So. Well, yeah, that was the last one. So that'll go down the history books for Savannah as well, too. But it was an interesting end. I think you could probably guess how it ends. I won't spoil it for you, but Halloween Ends, available out streaming now as well. You don't even need to go check it out in the theaters if you don't want to. But I had a good time getting out for the Halloween movie, a la Palooza.
All right, let's get into this week's guest.
Yes.
So this week we have someone who's been on the LPGA and the Epson Tour for 13 seasons. And Alex, like you said, she is the John Daly of women's golf.
What a dubbing that is. And I asked her, does that make her grimace or does she embrace that comparison? I'll be curious to hear her answer there. It was a funny one, but she's got a life and a career full of stories. Doesn't take life or golf too seriously, and it shows, but lovely personality from Daniela, and it shines through on this. So great conversation coming your way with a pro who's been through it all in the game.
That's right. We'll have that conversation in just a moment. But first, let's talk about Tee Up Golf. This is the official apparel brand of the Course of Life podcast. They're pretty new to the game, but they've got some really sharp polos and even sharper joggers of all things. That's right. Michael, am telling you all. Yeah. That not only do we have a sponsor who sells joggers and that's their primary item, but I have a pair of them and I wear them at least once a week.
I love that.
And they're quite comfortable. They're stylish. The wife likes them on me. They got nice deep pockets. You know, it's just a wonderful pair of pants. And they're made in the USA, Alex.
They can't go wrong with that. And I'm making my golf course debut with them this week. So I'll be reporting back next week. We finally got 72 degrees and sunny coming up this week for my round.
We've had that for weeks here in Savannah. Weeks.
Yeah, I know. Well, I've been waiting for it to be that cool so I could rock the joggers. But check out teeupstore.com. Promo code COL15 for 15% off anything at Tee Up Golf.
Next up on the tee, we have a professional creator of divots chasing her dream in women's pro golf and tells some amazing stories on her own podcast as well, the Mini Tour Saga. It's Daniela Iacobelli joining the Course of Life. Daniela, how are you today?
I am great. Thank you for asking.
Absolutely. Let's go back to the beginning for you. I know you're based in Florida now, but I believe your roots are originally from Michigan. Are you a Michigander? Is that right?
Yeah, originally born and raised the first 11 years of life.
Nice. We had one other Michigander on by the name of Willie Mack. He's a pro trying to make it out there right now. And he talked about how Michigan golf made him real tough growing up as a kid. What are your memories of growing up in Michigan before you moved away?
Honestly, I feel like it was so long ago. It was another life. I do remember the course that I played on as a kid. Now it's a shopping center and a Meijer and a gas station.
Of course.
It doesn't exist anymore. So that was pretty heartbreaking when I found that out. But I really wish that I could play that golf course now as an adult because it seems so hard as a kid. But, I mean, you're playing 5,000 yards and you can only hit the ball 100. So.
Yeah, seriously, I'd love to go back to some of those childhood courses, too, and just tear them up like I wish I could when I was 11.
Right?
Nice. So where did things go from there? Where did you move from 11 and when did golf start to get serious for you growing up?
Well, we moved to Florida when I was 11 or 12. And honestly, I felt like it was still recreational. I mean, I played high school golf. I played in some junior events. I don't think I ever played in an AJGA event. I didn't understand why they were so expensive. And I told my dad, I was like, save the money and buy me a car. I was like, that just seems silly.
Nice.
High school, went to college. And even in college, we were just a small Division II school at Florida Tech. Their golf program is now gone for both men's and women's, which is crazy to think about.
That's tough to hear. And you guys, and pat yourself on the back because you had a national championship in your run there. Is that right?
I did. That was also a really random win. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I was like, someone just give me a golf ball and let me just go play golf. And so I didn't know the ins and outs of college golf or college actually. And yeah, went to that as an individual. My team wasn't, I mean, it was a tech school. So we had a lot of engineers and aerospace majors and stuff like that. So to devote the time you need to be a student athlete and to go get that kind of degree it was almost impossible to find people that wanted to play golf. So our team wasn't great by any means. So to go as, I think I was the first person as an individual to win the NCAA championship, which was kind of cool.
Very cool. What was your golf school balance like in college? You know, how was the pie split for you?
Oh, it was, I look back on it and I mean, my coaches were older and they kind of saw the talent that I had and they knew, you know, not to really mess with that. It was more of, you know, organized team practices and everybody hit balls at the same time or do whatever. But, I mean, right out of college, I went on the Epson Tour, which at the time was the Futures Tour.
Yep.
And I didn't know anything. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know you had to register on a Tuesday and I didn't know you had to cut somebody a check. And I just kind of figured it all out as I went. And honestly, I don't think I really took it seriously till the last like maybe 6 years. So.
Interesting. Yeah. So I guess what was it when you first got out to professional golf? You said there was a lot of adjustments. What maybe surprised you the most, you know, looking up and down the range at the other players?
Everybody's a grinder. And I mean, girls would be out there just whacking balls till 7 o'clock at night. I'm like, no, that's never been me. It's never going to be me. And it was definitely a shock for me personally, because in college, I mean, I don't know how many times I won, but I won quite a few times and they were all, for me, fairly effortless, it seemed like. But to go out and see a full field of women who were consistently shooting under par, I mean, this was what, 10 years ago? So I was 22, something like that. It was like a cultural shock, because I was like, wow, there's people who also do this. You know, like,
yeah.
I just thought there was the LPGA. I didn't realize that there was a mini tour level of it, of just really, really good women golfers that are traveling the country trying to chase their dream as well. So I guess at some point I had to start practicing or start doing something, because they were beating me and I didn't like it and I wasn't used to it, to be honest.
So what was your way to kind of work, practice, and make it dealable in your life, being someone who was never really inherently a grinder growing up?
Honestly, I think I just started playing more. I've never been a range rat. I could probably chip for a while if I had a pretty good chipping green. I like to mess around with different shots and, I don't know, just try to be creative. But once you started making friends, it was always helpful for me to have a practice buddy. So you could just kind of bounce ideas off of each other. And it kind of made you more accountable to go practice with someone. You didn't want to bail. You didn't want to be the jerk that was like, I don't want to go.
Right.
So stuff like that kind of helped. And then as I got older, I learned that you don't have to go just practice. You just kind of go need to practice what you have to practice, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need to go practice hitting my driver, but I should probably go practice, you know, 6-footers. So let's go use our time that way. So
yeah, maybe you spend more of the things we're not great at, you know, just to polish up loose ends. Yeah,
it seems very logical, but you know, when you're 21 years old, that doesn't really come very easy.
Definitely. I mean, so let's talk about, you know, kind of everything that you've been through there. Obviously, you know, you've had time on the LPGA, you know, back to the Epson LPGA and kind of riding that wave and going back and forth in between. It's obviously created a journeywoman-like career for yourself. What is it that keeps you going and getting after it each week? I know you've been very candid about the idea that there have been times where you've contemplated just stopping and retiring. What is it that's kept you going throughout?
I think it's like the younger version of myself. 6, 8, 10-year-old me was just such a golf nerd, and I still am. And it was just something that I've always seen myself doing and always wanted to do. And, you know, I know I'm capable, and there's nothing else that kind of sparks my fancy. And I've done real jobs. I've worked as a head pro. I've worked in the pro shop. I've worked in the cart barn. I've worked at Target. I've sold cell phones, and just the mundane day after day stuff for me seems so miserable that I'm like, I could never. Like, you would have to pay me so much money to have a real job that I don't know. I just still love it. I love traveling. I love meeting people. I love going places. The passion has not dissipated at all.
No, I appreciate that. And as the 8, 10-year-old who was the golf nerd too, who didn't get to live that pro dream, what you are doing is cool, and you're doing it in an awesome way. And it's really cool to see your journey, and you're doing it with a lot of personality on social media, which I appreciate as well. I want to get to a highlight, which I mentioned before we hopped on. It's season 13 that's in the books now for you. And a professional win number 4 at Wild Horse. Tell me about what went through that the entirety of that week. And was that was this your sweetest win of the 4?
I mean, it's yes and no. I mean, when you kind of look back on all of them, they were all sweet in their own kind of way. But it was funny because the week before we were in Idaho, and I'm fairly confident the week before we had a week off, and I don't think I touched a golf club for all 7 days. Like, my golf clubs were still in my travel bag when I went to repack my travel bag. And wow. It just got towards the end of the season. I mean, I told myself all year, you know, I was just going to go enjoy it, and, you know, stop and smell the roses and just have fun and, you know, stop putting all this pressure on myself to do well or to show people what I can do and to just go play golf. And nothing was different about that week. It was a first time going to the golf course. It was a really fun golf course. I will admit that it was a very easy golf course. I mean, there was no trouble. The fairways are fairly wide. It's a resort golf course. You know, people go stay at the casino and go play golf.
Yep.
So it's not overly difficult. But we did have weather elements. We got a wind delay that week, which luckily I was on the opposite wave. And then one day, I think the heat index was like 106. So, I mean, we had elements to deal with, but I guess the eerie thing about all of my wins was at some point in the week, I kind of knew that it was going to happen. I knew that I was going to win. And I self-talked myself down the fairway of 10 the second day. And I kind of told myself, I was like, we're going to win this week. Like, keep the foot on the gas and let's just keep doing what we're doing. And I think it's going to happen.
Awesome. Very cool that you brought that to fruition. And the emotion definitely came out when you were putting out on 18. And an enthusiastic run and hug from your caddy and friend to tell us who's your support system on the bag there that week.
Yeah, Sarah's probably my best friend on the planet. I mean, we sit on FaceTime in the off season, probably far too much, but I asked her the night before and I was like, will you please caddy? Like, please, I need, you know,
just, I need you.
I mean, right. Like, more or less. I mean, I've won one before without a caddy. But there was just something about that one that, you know, after COVID hit and I felt like I was just in like a little bit of a lull as far as golf goes. And not that I necessarily put pressure on the win or on the money, but it was kind of just to prove to myself, like, you know, you're 34, you don't have a coach, you don't practice, you sure as hell don't know what a gym looks like. Like, let's, I mean, we can still compete with these 20-year-olds. Like, let's show them what the old bird still has. And I tell Sarah all the time, she's the reason why I won. I mean, the things we talked about on the golf course and her distractions, and I mean, she was shoveling bottles of water down my throat, like, make sure you're hydrated, keep drinking. And I mean, it was just, it's one of those things where, like, I wish that whole entire day was recorded, because to be able to talk about it with other people, or to maybe show other people who are struggling with their own golf games or whatever it is, it, I think, would cover literally every aspect of professional golf. And the things that we think about and how truly comparable they are to just the average golfer. I mean, it was silly. It was Tin Cup meets, like, I don't know. It's Tin Cup winning the Masters is what it felt like.
Yeah. Shout out to Sarah too, for being the part friend, part mentor, part sports psychologist and water feeder as well too on the hot day.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. It's Daniela Iacobelli joining us, DIAC, D-I-A-C, 1127 on Instagram and Twitter. I love following you on social media. You definitely have a really cool personality. It shines through. And one thing that I have seen on the internet is people love throwing around the John Daly comparison to Daniela Iacobelli. Is that something that you grimace at, or do you embrace that comparison?
I mean, I think it's entertaining. They compare me based off of visuals, which is cool. I mean, I don't know John Daly. I don't know his personality. He strikes me as a cool dude.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he seemed to have a decent career. I mean, mixed with ups and downs, which we all have. But the swing is kind of similar. I rip heaters all day long. I have one going right now. And there was a time where I was slinging back a whole bunch of Diet Cokes. So, I mean, the comparisons are there. So it doesn't bother me. I think it's funny.
And I think you'd probably sign off on two major championships on the LPGA, right? That would work for you?
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't suck, right?
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure. Did you see the news on the casting of Jonah Hill for the John Daly biopic? What are your thoughts on that?
I might be the first one to watch that. However it's released, I think that'd be pretty cool. I think golf needs that. We're too stuffy. Like, we need some liveliness in our sport.
Absolutely. I'm curious about the heaters. Is there any sort of regularity or superstition to when you light heaters on the golf course? I'm curious, are they only off tee boxes, off greens, or is it just anytime, anywhere when the mood strikes?
It's anytime, anywhere. Most tournament rounds, it's when I'm bored. Because they take 5.5 hours and girls take like 45 seconds to figure out what club they're going to hit. And I'm like, aren't you guys the ones that are on the range for 4 hours at a time? Like, you should, like, if I told you 127, you should be between two shots right now. Like, it should probably be a hard pitching wedge or an easy nine. I don't know why it takes them so long. So I just start ripping heaters just to pass some time, usually.
Just curious how that worked out. Interesting. Maybe who are your top, I was trying to think of who it might be, but top or most notable smokers in the game of golf that you remember in your history when you think of classic smoking golfers?
I mean, obviously John Daly. As I've gotten older, I would love to sit down and have a beer and a smoke and play at least one hole with Joanne Carner.
Yes, that's right. She's been killing it in the senior events lately too, I've seen.
Talk about a personality that doesn't get enough accolade. Like, that would be a fun time. I don't know who else smoked. Miguel Angel, he smoked.
Big time, yep. Good, big cigar guy. Very cool.
Yeah, he was more cigar, though, which I think is just so cool, right? You see all these old guys at the clubs just, you know, putting their cigar in their cigar holder on the golf cart, and here's Angel just walking down fairways. I think that's great. I don't know. I think the next one would be my dad. Like,
nice classic.
I mean, he doesn't play anymore, but growing up as a kid, I want to know how many cigarettes he went through in just a casual round. He was ripping heaters all throughout the day. So I guess it was kind of inevitable.
Nice. Danielle, let's touch on some quick tidbits from your social media before we sign off. You've been tweeting about off-season mode now. It looks like it's a little slower off-season mode than in-season mode. What's the day in the life update these days, and what projects are you up to?
Oh my God, it's so miserable. I might be the only person on the planet who hates the off-season.
I can tell, yeah.
Yeah, I golf Sunday, Monday, Tuesday with some friends. Monday and Tuesdays with the ladies of the club. We call ourselves the Jugs, just us girls golfing.
Nice.
And that's usually an early morning round followed by lunch and then maybe a Marshall's run. But what's today, Wednesday? Yeah, I did laundry today and went to the dentist. Like, I'm so bored. I'm like, someone give me a pro-am to play in, a pro-am party, like just something to do.
Yeah, you're checking off all the errands that we put off for months and months right now. You're in that phase, I can tell.
Yeah, I redid my closet. I'm doing stuff around the house. My mom's like, can you stop buying stuff? And I'm like, someone take away my credit card. Like, make it stop.
Nice. When you have time for a mini Tour Saga, the podcast I mentioned at the top, or if someone else is listening right now and enjoying what they're hearing, what's a cool episode or interview they should check out from the podcast?
Everyone that I've talked to says they should listen to my dad. I think it gives some good insight about, me as a person and how I came to where I am. And then both of the ones with Tyler, he was my first caddy as a professional, and he was my caddy for my first year on the LPGA. So we got to see a lot. We still text all the time, and he's usually one of the first people to congratulate me. He still follows me around. So those three are probably the fan favorites, I think.
Nice. We'll tune in for sure against Mini Tour Saga. So check that out if you want to hear more from Daniela. A fun question where we can put some good thoughts and vibes out in the atmosphere for the future. What's maybe one LPGA Tour event where you'd love to receive a sponsor's exemption in the future?
Honestly, I want to play in the Michigan Match Play.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's a fairly new thing, too. Yeah, we have the Dell Match Play here every year where I am in Austin, and that is quite a week. So I bet the women's would be just as awesome. I know they've just gotten that going the last few years, too, right?
I have never played in a Match Play event, and I would love to partner up with someone who, like, is very consistent at golf and then just be able to just go balls to the wall on every shot. I think that would be so fun.
Yes, that's intriguing. I love that. All right, Michigan Match Play, if you're out there listening. And most importantly, we end with the food questions. I know you'll appreciate this one. Yacobelli, Taco Bell, it makes too much sense that it hasn't happened yet. What's the Yacobelli, Taco Bell go-to order when you pull through the drive-thru?
Oh my God, I haven't been to Taco Bell in forever. I'd probably have to go Crunchwrap or... What's the hard taco that's covered in the soft shell thing too?
The gordita. The gorditas, chalupa is also a good pick. Love that. And then
I think it's one of those.
Last but not least, our 19th hole question. As always, when you get into the clubhouse after a day on the course, picture your favorite 19th hole. What's your go-to order there after golfing for a meal and a drink?
Something with French fries. I don't really care what. And if it's warm enough outside and they have it, I love me a good mango cart. I don't know if everybody knows what that is.
No, what is that?
It's like a fruity type beer. We have them a lot in Florida. They're at a lot of clubs. And it's like my favorite, like after, like, you know, those sweaty rounds where you need to change your shorts.
Oh yeah. I live in Texas. I know all about sweaty rounds.
Yes. Perfect. The sweaty round where you need to change your shorts, a mango cart is like, to me, it's like the most refreshing post-golf beer that exists.
I love that. I'm a huge mango fan too. So you are speaking my language right now. Love that. Hey, Daniela, thank you so much for hopping on the Course of Life again. Looking forward to following your journey from the Epson Tour to the LPGA Tour. We'll be supporting you the whole way, and hit them straight out there.
Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it.
And we're back. Great chat there with Daniela. The level of confidence to be able to walk down the fairway and just say, you know what, I'm going to win today.
Mid-tournament. Mid-tournament too.
I mean, it's just, that's crazy.
You're not going to possess that. Is that what you're trying to say? You're not going to possess that level of confidence at any point in your life on the golf course? Is that what you're getting at?
This is certainly never on the golf course. I guarantee that right now. It's never happening on the golf course. I might be able to mid-round kind of sit there and go like, you know, I'm playing really horribly. I think I'm going to break. I'm going to go over like 120 today. I think that's going to I'm going to do that today. I'm going to see how high I can go in my score.
Yeah, shoot for the moon, land of the stars, right?
I'm going to go for a bowling perfect score. I'm going to go for 300. So...
Yeah, that was really cool to hear that moment of confidence from her, because, you know, that's hard to dig up when you're in the position she's in her career. But amazing win in season 13 for her. And yes, just like myself, Danielle, also going to be first in line for the John Daly played by Jonah Hill biopic. I'm waiting day by day for that. That's going to be awesome.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. And if you like that interview plus everything else we do here on this podcast, make sure you punch that subscribe button on the podcast app of your choice. Make sure you never miss one of our new episodes when it drops every Tuesday. You can follow us on Instagram as well, COL Podcast. Also, Course of Life. Alex is Alex. I'm MWRINC. On Twitter, he's Course of Life 1, and I am MWRINC. We're also on YouTube as well, where you can watch our podcast, but you won't see us. Because we're camera shy. That's why we talk into microphones.
But great YouTube segue, because yeah. I am going to deliver a vlog for YouTube of my experience last Saturday at UTSA at the Alamo Dome, because that was vlog worthy for sure.
I mean, yes, it was. You were able to get press access to this game, so you were down there on the field, and this was this a typical mid-major college football game, would you say?
You know, it was, but the fans were after it there. It's just, you know, when you get to like a smaller school environment where you know there's not kind of like national prestige on the line, it's really about the community and the school and the network of alumni that are there supporting the program. It just feels like it means a little bit more. And I saw that from UTSA, and I saw that from the Mean Green too, Mike. I mean, these teams, they just want it. And the thing that really struck me about being down at field level next to the players and seeing them come on and off the field, I got some really cool shots of them coming on and off the field. So be sure to check out Instagram for that, was just how competitive these guys are and how bad they want it and how big they are. I don't want to ever get in the way of a Division I college football player. I hadn't been that intimidated to film something on my phone in a long time. Those boys are big, Mike. They're big.
Yep. They're big boys. And, you know, every week you make a pick of which crop of big boys is going to do best.
Yeah.
Your full card, you did quite well on your full card in 9-5, which is very good. But in your Run Your Pool article, not so much.
Yeah. And this is very cruel by me, because I said last week, I said, hey, my picks in my Run Your Pool article were good. The full card wasn't so great, but boy, those early picks are good. And now I'm doing the flip-flop on you. I'm doing a full flip-flop on you, and I'm saying, well, the article picks weren't that great. But if you check the full card on Twitter, so I guess the moral of the story here is you need to follow both. You need to follow me on Twitter at CourseLife1, and also check out that weekly Run Your Pool article for the early and late week thoughts. Nonetheless, we coast along to week 9 college football here. And just trying to stay above 500. That's the name of the game, so we can keep our money at the end of the season.
All right, it's week 9. I'm going to ask you a very far too early question.
Yes.
Who's winning the national championship?
Georgia Bulldogs.
Ooh, repeating.
Yeah, it's the repeat. This Georgia defense.
I'm all in on Tennessee right now. So,
You should be. Yeah. That was an awesome win over Bama. Shout out to the Vols for getting it done. This Georgia defense, Mike. Oh, my God. Wow. Are they animals? I just bet the Georgia under every single week. I take under the point total for whoever's playing with Georgia, because that team does not give up points. They are stingy, to say the least. Right now, if you're asking me, yeah, I can't. If you're Georgia to the field, I will take Georgia and you can have the field.
All right. There you go. Let's switch over to the professional side of the football with the NFL. You run your pool picks. We're recording this on Monday afternoon, late afternoon. That means your Monday night game is not in there yet. But 2-2 right now on your picks. So yeah,
not bad. We'll
see what happens.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll recap next week, because I've got I had the house divided Patriots Bears Monday Night Football game here, but between myself and my wife. So we'll recap that on next week's episode. But what we really need to get to And what continues to be, I'm going to build you up before I break you down here, continues to be the growing headline in the NFL is the surprise New York Giants led by Daniel Jones and new head coach Brian Daboll, 6-1 after another impressive victory, Mike. Good stuff from the G-Man.
Yeah. I mean, look, let's be honest here. The Giants are positioning themselves to be a Super Bowl, not just contender, but arguably a favorite right now to make the Super Bowl.
That's the most bizarre thing you've said in 4 years of talking football on this podcast. That's the most bizarre thing you've said.
I'm going to say that. And it's been, I mean, if you look at what the Giants have done, they're coming back to win games. They're finding ways to win games. And that, of course, is what makes you a winning football team.
It does.
You just find it, So it's just it's pretty great. It's pretty great to be 6-1 here. Unfortunately, we're not sitting atop the NFC East because the Eagles are undefeated.
I know. Crazy. Yeah.
That's even crazier, I feel like. But there you go.
And you said it last week. The NFC East might be one of, if not the best divisions in the NFL. With the Cowboys back now, too, with Dak Prescott. So we'll be following the G-men action for sure. But coaching, Brian Daboll, boy, does coaching make a difference in the NFL. And then that team showing it right there.
All right. So you built me up and I feel really high and mighty right now. But let's talk baseball. And I'm going to give you 30 seconds to tear me back down.
I'm really just going to start with a question. I was really confused because I kept seeing the scores in the American League Championship Series. And then I stopped seeing them. I thought that playoff series typically go like 5 or 6 or maybe even 7 games. So what happened? Was there something that ended the series early or just like explain things? I'm confused. There's usually so many more games in these series than in baseball playoffs. So.
The Astros cheated.
Are we going back to the well from 2017 after the unbelievable sweep that just occurred?
I don't know how many of these games you watched, Alex, but I heard trash cans being banged.
Oh, you did.
I could even see some sort of electronic device being used to transmit information to the batter. You know, there was some sort of communication going on here, and it just felt like the Astros were back up to their wicked ways.
It was surprising how quick the series was, really.
But on an honest note about this season, because we don't know if the Astros are still cheating or not. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. Incredibly depressing, horrible way to see Aaron Judge very likely end his career in pinstripes, which is even more. I think what's more depressing about this season is that Aaron Judge is probably done as a Yankee. You know, it's like he. I don't know. They need to pay him so much money. I don't know if they're really going to commit to that or not, but he needs to stay a Yankee, but I just don't think it's going to happen.
I'm going to ask a horrible question just to bury you one more time while you're in your grave here.
Yeah.
Which team would you rather see Aaron Judge play for next season, the Mets or the Red Sox? You can only choose one.
You're cruel. That's such the Mets.
Yeah. I think so. I think you got to bite that bullet and just keep him cross town to avoid what we all know would be just years of absolute gloom from me. I mean, I would be your worst nightmare if that happened. You would hate me so fast if that happens this offseason.
I mean. So what was it like when Roger Clemens became a Yankee?
Yeah, for you real then? Bad.
I mean,
so bad to the point where I was an 11-year-old and I bought a Yankee suck shirt with the number 21 on the back, and I got kicked out of middle school for it. That's how bad it was. Okay, yeah. I remember those days, and that hurt. There was a lot of pain associated with that point in my life. So I don't necessarily wish that on you, but it is a possibility. Crazy stuff.
So the Astros are going to be playing the fighting Phils.
They will. I mean, I guess you're a Phillies fan right now? You rooting for Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber to get it done? Or what's the deal here? The Phillies are big underdogs in this series.
I mean, yeah, but of course I'm rooting for the Phillies. Why the hell would I root for the Astros here? There's no possible reason for me to root for them. Also, I think it's funny that we have Bryce Harper, former, Washington National, who kind of jumped across the river and a little further north to go play for the Philadelphia Phillies. So. Same kind of idea here with Mike Judge. My money's in on the Phillies here just because I don't know if they'll actually win, but I just want them to. So
yeah, +170. So $10 to win 17. I like that value. So I'm gonna ride with the Phillies too. Let's see if they can beat the trash banging Astros.
All right. Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, our food themed segment and every Course of Life podcast. Be sure to follow on Instagram at always end with food. You never know when our next food reel is going to go viral. It could happen any moment right now. Let's get into the Halloween menu and the traditions. I run through it every year, but it's the staple. It's my mom's pasta sauce. I make pasta with the meat sauce and the secret ingredients, which I cannot share or else I would have to die. A loaded garlic bread. I got some fresh garlic cloves to throw in there too.
Nice.
Already scraped out one pumpkin worth of pumpkin seeds, and those are in the oven with salt and pepper. I think that's the Halloween menu. That's the carb heavy Halloween menu. So that way I don't eat a pound of candy on Halloween night and then I preserve it for the next 2 to 3 weeks before Thanksgiving. Yeah. That's the game plan there.
Yeah, that's not a bad plan. I will say for me for Halloween night, I have to go to bed at 8 because I have to be up at 3 in the morning to be able to
decorate. So, you know. Yeah, it's not like anyone will be out, you know, at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock on Halloween night to disturb your sleep at all, right?
So nope, not at all.
What was the bread of the week here? This new bread alert I saw this past week as well.
So this was a fig goat gouda and honey sourdough.
Yikes. Flavor alert. Jesus.
It needs some work. It needs some work. It wasn't as good as I would have liked it to be, but it was a really good combination of cheese and fig and that honey sweetness that you get from there. And I have to give a shout out to my coworker, Taylor, who gave me the idea to do it. So just a fantastic combination there of kind of sweet and savory to make it happen.
Love that. I think my new tangent thought for you, just because I'm on a little bit of a sun-dried tomato kick recently, is like maybe a sun-dried tomato, rosemary, something, something. I don't know. Let the imagination flow. Have you tried anything like that before?
The natural combination with sun-dried tomatoes and either rosemary or some sort of mixer would be maybe Parmesan. Though I think feta, when I hear rosemary, I think more feta because I like that kind of saltiness from it.
That could be next up.
So that could be interesting to do, actually. I like that idea.
Yeah, so check all that food calendar at Always End With Food. Again, we're at COL Podcast on Instagram. Thank you for tuning in. If you made it this far, you need to subscribe if you haven't already. Take this moment to do so. Thank you for joining. We'll see you next week.